But if you try sometimes, well, you might find.
Welcome to Tell Me More Live, the recorded version of our storytelling night at the Push Comedy Theater in Norfolk, Virginia. I'm Deb Markham, your podcast host and the producer of the show. Our live event features storytellers sharing their personal stories inspired by one word and a song. For our February show, the word was Infatuations, and the song was You Can't Always Get What You Want by the Rolling Stones. In this recording, Evan Lambert, a Push Comedy Theater social media manager with a bachelor's from Dartmouth and a master's from Columbia, tells us how he traveled the U.S. to interview, well, maybe interview Mr. Right.
Hello, hello. I see some familiar faces. I'm just going to wave everywhere so I don't miss anybody. So I was just thinking the other day that I'm going to take this mic off. There. I was just thinking the other day, this is random, about how I'm not quite as cute as I was 5 years ago. I'm getting a little muffin top. Cheeks are getting puffy. My hair's thinning. I'd still do me. I'm still infatuated with myself. If someone were to walk in that door who looked like me and talked like me and acted like me and was basically me and was like, hey, Evan, we should go have sex right now, I would be like, okay, I guess my story's over. Bye. The reason I'm starting with this narcissistic opener is to illustrate that I was very attractive 5 years ago. And so to convey how attractive I used to be and how conceited I still am, that's where I am now. And it kind of explains why 5 years ago I turned down a perfectly okay-looking Army sergeant because he didn't fit my standards of excellence in men, basically. And I didn't just turn him down. I, deserted him. Get it? Because military is clever. It's clever. And I didn't just desert him. I had someone, come up with this whole elaborate story to get me out of sleeping with him. So I never even, told him to his face, I think you suck as a person. That would be fair. But I never did that. Instead, I just came up with that story. But I did have a good reason for talking with him in the first place. I was actually doing a research study on LGBT people in the military. LGBT is lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender. They're whatever, they're fun. I'm one. I'm a gay. Sorry, ladies. And I was doing this study on LGBT people before Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed. So they had to hide their identities from the public, or they would get fired. They would get dishonorably discharged. So it's a tough situation, for sure. And I took on this research study because it was topical, because there were rumblings that Obama was going to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, so it was on people's minds. Also, it was fun. When I say I was studying LGBT service members, I mean I was sleeping with them most of the time. It was fun. And also, I had an intellectual infatuation with LGBT rights. I was actually just going to make up that phrase so that I could have the word infatuation in this, but it's a real thing. You can look it up on Wikipedia. It basically means you have a passionate obsession with a concept or an idea. And for me, that was LGBT rights and giving gay and lesbian people the right to marry, the right to adopt, to not be discriminated in the workplace. And that came from a very personal place. I'm passionate about trying to end discrimination, bring attention to it, because I was one of those people who was discriminated against. When I came out in middle school as bisexual, once again, I'm not bisexual, sorry, ladies. it was kind of like a stepping stone so I could like test out the waters before coming out as gay, like a practice run. So I lost half my friends. Actually, there's like a very successful local anchor here in Virginia Beach who was at my school with me, and we were sharing a hallway walking along the same side, and he saw me, and he stopped and looked at me, gave me this disgusted look, and actually like moved to the other side of the hall to get away from me. In high school, I got called a faggot. People talked about me behind my back. Kind of sucked. I didn't have few like real friends. I even had like a submission rejected from the pilot because my writing voice was too effeminate. It's true, but so that wasn't super fun. It caused issues for my family too. I never got the small dignity of like coming out. My parents actually like found an email I had written. It was very explicit about some stuff I had done with a guy. And that sucked. Like, my dad and I didn't talk for like 6 months after that. I thought I was like being disowned. I thought like my parents didn't love me. Like, it was awful. So you can imagine, like, coming out of high school, I would be like broken and alone. And I mean, you can get depressed. You can just like give up on life. You can get really sad, or you can get really angry. You can get angry because you feel like it's not fair. Like, the world's against you and you're a victim. And I felt all these things. I mean, I definitely got a little depressed in college. I drank a lot. I slept around a lot. I'm not making that sound as fun as it was. It was super fun. and of course I was angry, and I realized if I couldn't quite fix the brokenness in me, I could do something to help other people. I was meeting gay people from all over the place who had like really, really interesting stories and who had it worse than me, and it made me look at my life and I was like, okay, my life isn't so bad. And by sharing their stories with me, they're bringing attention to these issues. And so I decided to take on this research project so that I could share other people's stories with the world. So I started interviewing LGBT service members around the country in Houston, Dallas, Los Angeles, San Diego, New York. I was going through like national networks for LGBT service members, and they had to remain anonymous, of course. But I talked to a lot of really interesting people. I heard from people who had been fired because they were gay, or they were homeless now. They'd lost their job and didn't know how to deal, so they're homeless. I talked with one woman who was serving in Afghanistan. She couldn't even Skype with her partner of 20 years because her partner was a woman, and she could get fired if someone found out. So it put my life into perspective, and it eventually brought me back to Hampton Roads, where my mom is. My parents are here, and at this point, we hadn't quite 100% repaired our relationship. Like, there's still a lot we hadn't discussed. Hampton Roads was also the place I was very angry at. I remember, like, when I was leaving to go to college and I was in the car, I was on the Chesapeake Bay Bridge. I saw in the rearview mirror, like, Virginia Beach, and I was leaving it, and I didn't cry. I flicked it off. And then I cried. So, I mean, it was strange coming back. And so I was here doing my research, and by that, I mean, sleeping with service members. And one night I was interviewing. I was interviewing subjects at Rainbow Cactus. I was talking with one young, handsome man about his job and his life and how far away his house was, purely for research purposes. So we're talking, and it's going well. So we go to the car to continue my interview, and I'm like, you are such a fascinating subject. P.S. Hi, Mom. Thank you for coming. She can't even look at me right now. Sorry. So supportive. So that happened, and then we set up a follow-up interview the next week. So I show up at his house with interview materials in case we actually have an interview. And then I see someone on the porch who's ugly as shit. Like, I'll put this delicately. If I saw him on Tinder, I would swipe left immediately. Like, he was, like, kind of, like, short and squat and had, like, bulging eyes. And he had, like, this deep, throaty voice and, like, a beer belly. And it was just grim. It was a bad situation. And I realized, like, I had beer goggles on when I met him. So I get my interview stuff because I'm like, okay, we're definitely only doing an interview now. And so we're doing it, and it's actually really moving. And he's, like, telling me about how he has found happiness here despite, like, how horrible his situation is. Like, of course, like, he realized it sucked. Like, he couldn't be out, and he had to, like, have secret boyfriends, and he couldn't tell anyone about his life or share that part of himself with anyone. But he just accepted it, and he was realistic. And by having that attitude, he was able to work with that, work with his life, and just find happiness where he could. And I thought that was really moving, and it made me realize I've had the wrong attitude about Hampton Roads and, like, my life all along. Like, I just never put it into perspective. So it's really, really moving, and I'm just like, oh my God, LGBT rights, blah, 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 blah. And then he wraps it up, and he's like, I think you should get naked now. So it kind of, like, shakes me a bit, because I'm all like, oh, LGBT rights? Oh my God, he wants me to get naked. Wait, what is happening? I proceed to not get naked. That's a slippery slope. I know where that goes. And instead, I go to the bathroom. I excuse myself to the bathroom, and then I call my mother. And like I said, at this point, like, we haven't completely repaired everything, but it's just one of those moments where you revert to, like, being a child, and you're like, I give up control. I can't take care of myself right now. Please help me. So I'm like, Mom, I'm, like, in the bathroom of this guy's house. Like, I don't want to have sex with him. And I think she fills in the blanks, and she's like, she's hearing, like, I don't want to have sex with him because I'm actually straight, just like you thought all along, and I was confused. Like, I really want to just get married and have grandchildren. So she's like, yes, I am on board. I am with you. And so she is like, okay, I got this. Like, I have a foolproof plan. Put me on speakerphone, walk into that room, pretend there's an emergency. I'm like, okay. She's like, trust me. This is a great plan. So I put her on speakerphone, walk in. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. And she's like, Evan, you need to come home right now. The dog is having a stroke. So then I was like, I guess I gotta go. Then I left. And to this day, he thinks that my dog had a stroke. But there was this moment, like, right before I was done with my research, where I was interviewing this photographer who took photos of LGBT service members, and he always had their faces hidden. They were, like, turned from the camera, or, like, it was in shadows because he couldn't reveal their identities. And my mom came to this with me, and it was really awesome. It was, like, supportive, and she actually cared about my research and stuff and LGBT rights. So I'm doing the interview. She goes and sees one of these pictures, and, like, I guess the guy in the picture, he's supposed to be, like, at ease, like they do in the military. And my mom was like, is he supposed to be at ease? And the photographer's like, yeah. She's like, you're not doing it right. So I'm just like, thanks, Mom. I can't take you anywhere. But I mean, it was great, though. Like, she wanted it to be perfect, which showed that she cared. And so 3 years later, I'm looking at his photograph book after it's published. I come across that picture. He's actually, like, changed it, and he's made the guy at ease. Like, he's standing the right way. And so I'm just realizing, like, after all this research, like, getting closer to my mom, and also, like, releasing some of my anger and just, like, learning how to, like, live my life better and be happier and just, like, accept everything and just take the good with the bad, like, I realized that I was also at ease. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
That was Evan Lambert, telling us how mom is sometimes still the best person to turn to when you're looking for a good escape plan, especially while on the way to finding yourself. Thank you, Evan, for sharing your story. To everyone else, thank you for listening to Tell Me More Live, the recorded version of Tell Me More, a live storytelling event at the Push Comedy Theater in Norfolk, Virginia. If you would like to join Tell Me More or help out in any way, visit tellmemorelive.org. That's tellmemorelive.org, where you can find a schedule of upcoming shows and listen to more storyteller podcasts. Until the next time, remember, a happy ending always depends on where the story ends.